the volume.
The Colin Cowherd Podcast brought to you by FanDuel. It's never been easier to play fantasy on FanDuel. Whether you love basketball, golf, soccer, or any fantasy sport, there is a contest for every fan. FanDuel, more ways to win. Hey, this is Prime Cuts, the best of the Colin Cowherd Podcast. More good stuff this week. Longtime NFL writer Mike Silver discussing Deshaun Watson trade rumors. Bengals head coach Zach Taylor opened up about what makes Joe Burrow tick. My guy Chad Millman tells me, my picks, sharps or squares in week 8. First, my top takes of the week. In my business, I notice this a lot. And I don't want to call out anybody individually, but I call it safetyism. You never get pushback if you're a sportscaster if you play it safe. You never have a contrarian take. You always go to Twitter and, oh, Mahomes is great. Of course, you're going to get no pushback. I take great pride in the fact that I can do a simulcast. In fact, we're the only one in the country still doing it. I get a number on TV and radio and podcast and digital and Facebook. And the reason is that we're willing to say things and get shit for it. And I said this a couple of weeks ago. It's very easy to criticize those who criticize Baker Mayfield. But you and I all know this. All the safe takers out there, you and I know this. They today would not give him an extension. You know it and I know it. And I've been saying it for 3 years and getting shit for it. But a prime example is Mahomes. Everybody is petrified of criticizing Mahomes on social media because you get pushback. But he's loose. He's getting looser. He is not the easiest quarterback to coach. Andy Reid's lovable. It's good ownership. I think a smart GM. But right now, Kansas City is trying to throw haymakers. And they don't do a lot of things well. And it's a very thin roster where they pay 5 or 6 players top dollar. And some of this, not all of it, not a majority of it. But right now, Derek Carr is playing as well or better than virtually every quarterback in the league. It's okay to say it. And Mahomes isn't perfect. People forget this. He's been in the Super Bowl twice. In 7 of the 8 quarters, he's been outplayed by Jimmy Garoppolo and a 44-year-old Tom Brady. I like Mahomes. I do not think Kansas City is a special team this year. I think they're bad defensively. The offensive line is a little hit and miss. They've also had injuries. But sometimes I roll my eyes. It's okay to criticize Patrick Mahomes. He's not played as well. He's made some really bad throws. In the last 15 games, the Chiefs are 3-12 against the spread. What does that tell you? The media has become the fans. They're overvaluing Kansas City. They have not played particularly well. You saw the Super Bowl. You've watched all these preseason games. You've watched these regular season games. When a team is 3-12 against the spread, they're being wildly overvalued. A lot of that is the fans. A lot of that is the media. Just because you like Andy Reid and because Patrick Mahomes can throw it with his left hand doesn't mean they're not fallible. It's okay. You'll get a little pushback on social media. Eye roll. That's part of the business. If you're not getting pushback, you're not really doing your job. There's a lot of different things to talk about. I thought it was interesting that Bill Belichick not only beat the Jets, but rubbed it in. They were throwing the ball. Play action passes with 3 minutes left and a 30-point lead. Why? We all know he doesn't like the Jets, but he also has a deep respect for football history. And win or lose, Belichick has always done it by respecting the game. Well, he was pouring it on the Jets. And my theory is this. He wants to make sure that everybody knows that the Mac Jones, the quarterback he liked, the rookie, is a lot better than Zach Wilson. He wants to make sure you know that. Secondly, they are no longer the kings, not only of the AFC, but the AFC East. He is now competing potentially with the Dolphins and the Jets for free agents, for coaches. This is no longer Bill is at a certain level, everybody's at a different level. He's in a dogfight with the Jets and the Dolphins to get that wild card berth. And he wants to make an imprint around the league is we're good. We're getting better. If you're a free agent, if you're a top coach, keep your eyes on us. I think you'll see this the rest of the year from Belichick. If he has a chance, if he smells blood, he's absolutely going to pour it on. That's not the Belichick we knew with Brady. They had a lot of games with a lead and 7 minutes to go, and they were running the ball, eating the clock, and going to bed and getting out of town. But I thought it was really interesting to see how he not only won, but poured it on the Jets to make it known there is a gap still between the Patriots and the Jets. We may not win this division, but there's still a monster gap between these two franchises. Not that I'm cynical, but I tend to look at what things can't do before what they can do. And I'll give you an example. When Zoom came out, right, we go into a pandemic and everybody loves Zoom. And I bought some early stock and then I sold it. And I don't even know what the stock price is. And everybody looked at it and thought, oh my God, I can work remotely. I don't have to leave the house. And my takeaway is, yeah, but it can't give me perfect audio like having coffee at Starbucks. It's impersonal. It goes in and out. You become very tech dependent. And the other thing is about Zoom is I like to leave the house. People gain weight during the pandemic because they didn't leave the house. When I go to work every day at Fox, I'm moving around, I'm walking between breaks, I'm going to the bathroom, I'm grabbing a coffee, I'm moving, I'm walking upstairs. Like Zoom culture is not terribly healthy and it can be maddeningly frustrating. Same thing with Bitcoin. People look, oh, what it can do, make me rich. I look at it and say, what it can't do, buy me a car tomorrow. I'll put a little money in Bitcoin. And I think cryptocurrency has a future. But what it can't do is buy me things tomorrow. And so I'm not interested right now. I've always said this about Baker Mayfield. It's what he can't do that limits Kevin Stefanski. You can't give him 45 to 50 throws a day. He's got poor judgment. He plays with a cockiness that can be detrimental. You can't have an average to below average offensive line and win with him. So far, he can't work well with OBJ. I know he can throw, but what he can't do is why I could never give him the bag. I just think too often we look at the cans without realizing the can'ts are what limit people, limit companies, limit quarterbacks. All right, Zach Taylor, third year as a head coach, first place in the AFC North, which is just crazy. I picked him for last. What do I know? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. So, Zach, when was the first time you saw Joe Burrow, and what was your initial impression?
Probably the first time I heard the name was he was considering going to Cincinnati, the University of Cincinnati, before he went to LSU. That's probably the first time the name popped up. I've known his dad for a long time. I knew Dan and Jamie Burrow, his two brothers that played in Nebraska. I didn't know that there was a Joe Burrow that existed, you know, until really he transferred to LSU and then he became part of the draft process. And that was really the first time he ever came on my radar. But I've known his family because they're all Nebraska alums and they went to Nebraska and his brother graduated right before me. So I've known the Burrow family for a long time.
Yeah, my daughter sat next to him in Baltimore this weekend. She went to the game. Bizarre. I actually sent it to Joe, and I'm because I DM him once in a while to wish him well. And in the process of drafting him, when you're sitting down there with your general manager and the Brown family, what could you share with them about the family before meeting Joe to say, like, you have to draft this guy?
Well, you know, I didn't know Joe as well, obviously, so I had a hard time speaking to him, but just son of a coach, you know, and so you do your research. Okay, what does that mean? Does that mean he's a football junkie? He grew up, he understands the game, and he's got that edge to him, you know, that you need to have. And those are some of the qualities that he did have once we got to know him. So, you know, just it's a tremendous family. You can see why Joe is the way he is, and we're really lucky to have him.
Yeah, he has kind of a Brady, and comparing anybody to Brady is not great, but there is you know, Jay Glazer always said there's a little bit of an unhealthy obsession with successful people, whether it be if I'm a broadcaster, you're in tech, or you're a football player, that I was talking to Mark Sanchez today, and he goes, oh God, Joe loves football. Joe loves football. He likes the process. He likes practice. In your years of coaching players, that's not true with everybody. Some guys don't love it as much, Zach. I mean, if I said to you, Joe loves it, what percentage of players in your coaching experience live for it like a Joe?
He's a little bit different that way. You know, he's got the right edge to him. And a lot of people do just love what football brings to their life. They don't necessarily love everything. They're talented and it's what's expected of them and they're good at it and they love the things it brings. Joe, from my time around him, he's obsessed with the process, you know, every little detail. And, you know, it's never perfect for him, which is great. That's what you want from your starting quarterback. And it just trickles down to the entirety of the team. Everyone's got so much confidence in him. They don't want to let him down because he's going to put himself to be in a position to be ready. And in his teammates, you can just get that sense. They don't want to let him down. And that's the standard that we're looking for.
Can you get in his ear during a game? You know, you'll hear these legendary stories. Hey, we drew it up in the sand, or we did a little wiggle. We'd never practiced. Are you comfortable now occasionally going to a space like that where in a game, situationally, you're like, try this, or he offers his opinion to you similarly to do a little wiggle maybe that it's off script?
Absolutely. You know, we just have to make sure it's sound. There's probably been times over the 2 years where we've gone to him and I just, hey, are you comfortable with this? If we did this, can you see it? Do you feel good about it? And that's one thing that I do admire about Joe is he's very honest and he's not one of those guys who's just going to yes sir you to death because you think that's the answer you want. He'll be very honest. I don't understand. I don't want to do that. I don't like that. Please do this. And that's the communication I want. You know, he's an extension of our coaching staff. It is different when you're talking to a quarterback at times. You want that clear and honest feedback, and Joe's not afraid to give it to you, and I appreciate that.
You know, that to me is a fascinating relationship. I mean, I've seen it with other quarterback comes over, coach is like, you tell me what you see. A lot of quarterbacks, you know, due to the hash marks, college to pro, it takes them a while to see the entire field. Could you tell that Joe could see it from his film at LSU? Did it take him time at practice? Because take me and the people listening to this, I think a lot of people, they just don't realize that's not a natural innate thing to be able to have somebody running at you and you can see four different receivers. Give me the process for Joe on that, when he saw it, why he's so good at it, and when you first recognized it.
Well, I think for Joe, whether it's naturally or it came about it in high school, he's just got such a high football IQ. It makes sense to him. Just seeing something for the first time makes sense on why it's happening. And so Joe, playing in college, you know, the system they were in, Joe Brady came from the Saints. There was a lot of NFL concepts. So there was a lot of full field progressions. You needed to understand the coverage and then understand how the concept attacked it. And so you could see that on tape, how quickly it was going to translate to what we do, because there's a lot of crossover there with the West Coast offense. And so we had a good feeling just from watching his tape, watching his 16 games or whatever he played, and then interviewing him, you could tell, hey, this guy's got it. He'll quickly pick it up. Our first training camp, you know, it was the COVID training camp where he had no offseason. And he hit the ground running when we put the pads on. And you could just tell this guy's going to be special right from the get-go.
There's a fine line, and I see it with Burrow. There's a fun, I don't know if the word's cockiness, but it's really likable. Like, I like him. I think that means something. I'm not going to mention names, but there have been quarterbacks who are cocky. And I don't know if I like them. I watched Brady and Peyton Manning and Eli last night on TV give each other crap. All of them I found incredibly likable. I mean, like even in their, as Peyton was digging into Tom, I'm laughing. It's like a comedy act. There's something about Joe to me. I don't want to reach here, but there's a likability about him. And I don't know what that means or how it manifests itself on the field, but I see it in all of his interviews. What am I seeing?
You're seeing a guy that really doesn't care what other people think. And so he doesn't feel like he's got to put on an act to impress people just because he's in the spotlight. He's just Joe. And that's just his personality. He's confident because he puts in the work and you know, he doesn't run from that. Yeah, he's got the right edge to him, but I just think the most important thing is he's not out there to impress people. He just wants to be one of the guys. He's a guy that works hard. He plays well on the field, and he's just himself. And you know, that's a cool thing to be around.
You guys went and got a wide receiver, not an offensive lineman. And it was, you know, it was a mixed reaction. I mean, I love the draft, but there's no right answers. The greatest coaches have whiffed on first round picks. It's hard. It's not science here at all. Take me back to the discussions, because it was obviously a great move and Jamar's amazing. You know, Joe was vocal about it, verbal about it. This guy's unbelievable. Was it a long decision? Was it something you went back and forth on? That, I mean, take me to the process of that.
Yeah, there was a lot of discussions. You know, you only had to pick five players because we were picking fifth. So you didn't need to have a conversation about 30 guys. You know, you knew it was going to be one of the five and there was a couple quarterbacks that were going to come off the board. So we took our time. There was no need to make a decision before April hit. You know, we were going to use all 3 months of it. But the most important thing is we needed to be more explosive. You know, the relationship with him and Joe weighed into it a little bit. That wasn't the deciding factor. We need to be more explosive. Having a great explosive receiver helps your offensive line as well. So not only does it help your quarterback, not only does it help your offensive line, not only does it help your defense because you can score more points and take some of the pressure off of them. So at the end of the day, you look at a lot of championship offenses that have had stellar quarterbacks, and a lot of them had three really good receivers, and defenses couldn't hone in on them. And so that's our point of attack, is put a lot of weapons out there. And I mean, you look at Jamar Chase's 80-yard touchdown the other day was a slant route. That's quick game. The linemen don't have to protect very long. And I don't have to call any extravagant play. I call the slant flat for 80 yards. You know, it doesn't get much easier than that. And so, you know, we're obviously very happy with the decision.
Hey, the NFL season is approaching the halfway point. FanDuel Sportsbook has a little something different to offer for the Sunday night matchup between Dallas and Minnesota. Listen up. FanDuel's given new customers 25-1 odds on any touchdown scored in the game. What does that mean? It means you can end the NFL Sunday night by winning $125 on a $5 bet. Okay, I like Dallas -1.5 if Dak Prescott plays. I like Zeke getting a touchdown. Kirk Cousins shrinks on standalone games. Dallas is now running at a higher percentage than all but three teams. With Dak and his calf strain, they'll be more run reliant. Take the Cowboys -1.5. FanDuel's the number one rated sportsbook app in the country. It's easy, it's safe and secure, and the fast payouts are now accepting Venmo. Yep, they're accepting Venmo. So FanDuel, always hooking you up with great offers. Just sign up. Promo code's Colin. It's always Colin. Sign up this week, C-O-L-I-N, before the Sunday night matchup. Win $125 on a $5 bet. $10 first deposit required. Must wager in designated offer market. Max bonus, $125. 21 plus and present in Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia, or West Virginia. Refund issued as non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 7 days. Max refund, $10. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbookfanduel.com. Same game parlay available for multiple sports in all states on mobile/web. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Visit fanduel.com/RG in Colorado, Jersey, and Virginia. Or call 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. Tennessee Red Line is 1-800-889-9789. Or go to 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia. Or call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXT-STEP to 53342 in Arizona. Or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut. Let's bring on my buddy Mike Silver. All right, Mike, love having you on. Let's start. So the Miami situation now, Jay Glazer joined the reporting that Deshaun Watson, they're working on making a move. Tua has completed 75% of his throws in the last 2 weeks. He had two god-awful picks, though, against Atlanta. And, you know, they've made their decision. Teammates didn't name him captain. He was benched three times. He was hurt. I mean, they've made their decisions. They see practice stuff we don't. He's not the guy. There's not a lot of it there. Is there anybody else with your labyrinth of sources? I got to believe Philadelphia has to consider it. Washington has to consider it, regardless of my personal opinion on Deshaun Watson and the story. Let's just talk from football operations. Is Miami the only team involved here?
You know, I think Carolina comes back into play. And I know Matt Rhule has tried to go out of his way to say, hey, I'm all in on Matt or on Sam Darnold. But he benched Sam Darnold, you know, today. So, yeah, It's a complicated equation. I don't think the Eagles will ultimately do it, because I think at the highest levels of that organization, they will ultimately say, you know, there's just too much we don't know. There are the overtones of what he's accused of doing. There is the possibility of league discipline and also legal discipline potentially that could factor in. And you're really, really giving up a lot. Yeah, that doesn't mean they won't, but really this is an ownership decision, right? Ultimately.
Right, right.
And so yes. What I don't know that Jeffrey Lurie ultimately, when he sees that equation, he got a Super Bowl, his Holy Grail a few years ago. He knows they're trying to build it back up. Does he think if they give up all that for Deshaun Watson, they're back right now? I don't know. And then you don't know if you have them. David Tepper, the Panthers owner, clearly just wants to take home run swings, right? And
yes,
and he'll handle the blowback. He's like, look, man, you had an owner who was accused of stuff, and we got rid of him. So, you know, don't worry about the Deshaun Watson thing. I'll handle that. So I think that's a possibility. And Miami, you have an older owner, Stephen Ross, and you have now a coach, Brian Flores, who all of a sudden feels pressure. And I don't think it's as much Chris Greer, the GM. He's done a great job of getting them the ammunition to build it. But I think it's more of a Brian Flores call as to who gets actually picked. And, you know, my friend and former colleague Jeff Darlington at ESPN brought up a really good point a week ago, which is Brian Flores seems to be in that same pattern. We've seen many Dolphin coaches in the Ross era have, which is early on, whoa, like Tony Sperano. Wow, hey, they won the division. Look at that. Adam Gase, hey, got him to the playoffs. Like, look at what's going on here. And last year, Brian Flores, you know, some big wins and nearly going to the playoffs. So now you look at Brian Flores and you're like, what is the plan? What's going on? And then the last thing, and you and I have talked about this a lot. It's one thing if you tried it, you pick Tua that high and it's not going great early, but you can't help but look to your left and to your right. And that's Joe Burrow went one. Okay, he went one, but that's a home run right there. And then Justin right. Herbert went right after Tua, and that's maybe a grand slam. And so you have to view the Tua pick through that prism.
Yeah, the aesthetics are really bad because fans keep score. The draft now, it's not like a hockey draft. It's not like a baseball draft. It gets bigger ratings than NBA playoff games. So right. Everybody watches it. You know, these are guys from Oregon and LSU and Alabama. We all know these guys and we know, you know, the standings on the Dolphins and where they chose. So Raiders, post Gruden, they're playing with an incredible energy. We know that interim coaches, that's often the case.
New conspiracy theory. The Raiders what? Leaked the emails because they wanted Rich Bisaccia. No, I'm kidding. Obviously, I'm speaking in jest. But, you know, you're right. They're playing really, really well at a time when they could have easily, started moping and been discombobulated.
Yeah, it also points to the fact that, and this goes back to sort of a cultural reality, this is a quarterback league more than ever. Derek Carr's good. He's got, you know, 7 to 8 legitimate weapons with Darren Waller healthy or not. And the truth is, it overcomes a lot of shortcomings. I said this last week. Tua can win games, but what you're looking for, Tua's not the problem, but he's not the solution. The solution in the NFL is a great quarterback. He minimizes all your problems, injuries, bad free agent signings, draft picks.
Right.
And we all struggle with Derek Carr because he came from Fresno State. He wasn't a first rounder. The team was bad initially. Do we have to come to the point where we just go, shit, Derek's a top 10 quarterback? By the way, I've come to terms with that with Dak Prescott. He throws a better ball today than 2 years ago. I think Derek's one of those. He's good.
Well, here, I'll give you both sides on Derek. What you said is what they think. He might not be the difference, you know, put us over the top, but we can definitely win with him. Now, so some things have changed, right? The defense is better with Gus Bradley, with the guys they brought in. That's a big deal. Greg Olsen has called 2 really good games with John Gruden gone. Let's give offensive coordinator Greg Olsen some credit. He is stepping up to this challenge. So we look at Rich Bisaccia, but we also look at, you know, John Gruden's been replaced as a play caller too, and that's gone well. They don't believe Derek always is the, you know, toughest, you know, guy in, you know, and I know he's been physically tough. I just think they think there are times where he isn't your
sensitive.
Classic. Yeah. But the pro Derek Carr, and I've been saying this for years, look at this guy's comeback record. Start looking at the numbers of how many times Derek Carr, because I've been in a lot of these games where he brought them back in clutch situations and won. If I was a player on that team, I would believe in Derek Carr just off that. He is really, really clutch. So it's exciting what's going on with the Raiders. John Gruden, you know, when he first struck me the first time around, he did something transformative. They had an organization that was paranoid, the world's against us, kind of mopey when things got down. And he came in and just said, shut up, we're going to play hard. And remember they beat the Chiefs his first or second year at the end of the year when they were out of it and the Chiefs needed a win on the road. And I was like, what has gone on with the Raiders? Well, he built them into what ultimately would be a Super Bowl team, although in his absence, and then he beat them. But maybe that's his legacy this time around for all the horrific overtones of his exit. Maybe with Rich Bisaccia and Greg Olsen and Gus Bradley and those players, they're not moping in the wake of John Gruden's departure, the way Mark Davis seemed to be, by the way. Ask the NFL. They have all the answers, you know, at a time when
I know.
It called for bold statements and leadership and, you know, Al Davis's sense of equality and inclusion and social justice. And hearing me defend Al Davis is going to make a lot of people laugh if you know our history. But Al Davis was, you know, phenomenal at that stuff. So Mark Davis kind of came off terrible, like, the whole world's against us. Late was better the second time. But give credit to those players, those coaches. They put their heads down and played hard.
Yeah. All right, Chad Millman, my buddy, Chief Content Officer, Action Network. So let me start with this week. I like the Cowboys -1.5 at the Vikings. One of the reasons is, in standalone games, Kirk Cousins historically shrinks. I also think the calf injury for Dak Prescott is an advantage. The Cowboys are at their best when they run the football about 55 to 57% of the time. Because of the calf injury, they will. Zeke and Tony Pollard will get lots of work. They're healthy up front. I think the Cowboys, this is the only team that's covered the spread. Why? They're still undervalued. I like them to beat the Vikings. Sharper square, Millman.
Square. And the reason you went 2-3 last week is because you probably didn't listen to me and everything I was saying, because I didn't go 2-3 last week. In my best five, I went 3-2. And 3-2 over the course of the season, that's how you put money in your pocket. So this is a square pick, my friend. It's a square, like in a Quentin Tarantino movie, it is square. The Vikings defense is top 10 across a variety of metrics. You mentioned Dak Prescott and the calf injury. Dak Prescott has not been pressured much this year. When he is pressured, he is not a very good quarterback. And the Vikings defense, while they haven't been forcing a lot of turnovers, they are able to pressure the quarterback and do it effectively. That's going to be a challenge for a guy who has a calf injury. What's most impressive, though, about the Vikings defense is they're top 10 in a variety of metrics without forcing a lot of turnovers, which is really all the Cowboys have been doing on defense. And it sort of made everything else shine a little bit brighter. And so you're talking about a defense that is good, fundamentally good, not getting the value against a defense that is not so good, getting a lot of attention. That's why the line, even though the Cowboys are the team getting the majority of the bets here, it's moved in the opposite direction. You've got a reverse line move here. So the Vikings are the right side in this game. A couple other things, you know, some Mike Zimmer stats against non-division opponents since 2003. He's 48-26-1, about 65%. He's also about 60% against the spread at home. So most wise guys, they've got this power rated at closer to a coin flip. One other thing you have to think about. Dallas is undefeated against the spread, 6-0, right? This has only happened six other times this late in the season in the past 20 years. So you have to ask yourself, are the Cowboys due for a regression with a defense that commits a lot of, that forces a lot of turnovers, but isn't that great otherwise, or are they unbeatable? I'm going to take a Vikings team at home that performs well with a good defense, which one more thing I will say. Look at the Vikings' losses right now. Two of them are against two teams that we now see as being two of the better teams in the NFL, the Cardinals and the Bengals, two games that they should have won. So it's a team that, would they really be 2-point underdogs or 1.5-point underdogs if they were 5-1 with wins over the Bengals and the Cardinals? Probably not. Take the Vikings.
Okay, I always ask you this. The Atlanta game to me was incredibly tasty, but I've been burned so many times, I'm a little scared. Is there a game that I have not discussed that you have a strong feeling about for our audience?
Love the Saints. Love the Saints this week against the Bucs. Number's about 5.5. It's been going up. This is going to be another Projo game. The pros are going to be on the Saints. The Joes are going to be on the Bucs. The Saints defense is just really, really good. And we've seen Tom Brady struggle more on the road. We've seen with the Saints, because of what they did against the Seahawks, they're a little bit deflated from a primetime game. You mentioned the Bucs blowing out the Bears as huge favorites. When a lot of people thought the Bears would be able to cover in that game, that we didn't know yet what the Bears were going to be. So you're getting a huge amount of inflation on the Bucs. You're getting deflation on the Saints. You've got a really good defense. I think it's a great coaching matchup. I like taking the Saints in this spot. So that's certainly a game that I'm thinking quite a bit about.
So here's my Colin theory of the week. So I had a question to Tom Brady this week. I was on some Zoom call and there was like 15 of us or 12 of us, you know, Jim Nance and Scott Van Pelt and Adam Schefter, those kind of guys, right? And then somehow I snuck on. And I asked Tom, if you could make one rule change in the NFL, what would it be? One, it could be CBA, offseason, rule change, whatever, a radical change in the league. And he said, Colin, my good friend, he didn't say that. He said, the NFL is becoming a skills competition. That if you have a good quarterback, it's virtually impossible to stop. He goes, my 600th touchdown to Mike Evans, I would not have thrown that ball 5 years ago. But the safety can't hit anybody. And he said, and I noticed this 2 weeks ago, I told this to you. The best quarterback won 13 of 14 games 2 weeks ago. If Josh Allen doesn't slip, it's 14 of 14. There are fewer upsets in the league. The margin of victory. These lines now are often Saturday lines. The best quarterback leads 7 of 8 divisions. The only exception is Mahomes, and it's not like Herbert and Derek Carr are slouches. That between the regulations and the lack of really good corner talent, Steve Kimes talked to me about this, the best quarterback now is just winning all the games. Like the Dallas-Minnesota game to me comes down to, I like Dak more than Kirk Cousins. I'm having my worst year ever betting. I hit 57% almost every year for 15 years. Last year's a COVID year, no preseason, I threw it out. I have friends who bet a lot. They can't hit. And I'm throwing a lot of stuff out I've never done. I've never bet big numbers. I always, my betting theory was always take competent quarterbacks getting points. Well, competence not good enough anymore. And Brady went on to say, when he came into the league, even 10 years ago, he goes, you could win multiple ways. You can't anymore. You can win one way. We have a quarterback and weapons. That's how you win. He goes, when I started with New England, when we played finesse teams, we won every time. Highly skilled teams. But Pittsburgh would beat us. They weren't nearly as highly skilled, but they were physical. Well, when you take the physical out of it, it's just a 7-on-7 skills competition. And he goes, even though I'm benefiting, I don't like where the league's headed. And so that's just kind of my theory on this. All the things I've always used aren't working. I mean, I've never bet 38% in my life. I was at 57 my life. I can't get anything now. Your takeaway on this?
Dude, there is so much to unpack there. I don't know if I want to talk about the Hall of Fame level of name dropping from Kimes to Van Pelt to Sheffield.
I know.
To
crushing.
Nance. To Brady, I can't believe like this call happened and I'm just hearing about it now. That's amazing. The Saturday lines, that's such a great inside baseball reference to like these lines looking like college football lines, because every Saturday you'll see a 21-point spread and in the NFL, you'd never see that. And last weekend we had the Cardinals as 20-point favorites and they freaking covered. And you make an incredible point. I will bet every single weekend with my best friend growing up, huge fan of yours, by the way. And every year, the reason we bet together is because we do it head to head and I'd crush him because I'd bet home dogs. I'd bet dogs that were huge underdogs against teams that looked like they were world beaters. And he would do what the public does. He'd bet favorites. He didn't matter. Whatever team was better, that's who he was going to bet. And this year, like, everything's been turned upside down. And it's been really challenging. The books are getting killed, right? Because the books love when the big underdogs win. And last week, like, you had the Lions, and that was it. The Cardinals killed the Texans. The Bucs killed the Bears. The Packers killed the Washington football team. Like, and the Tennessee Titans were like the one team that the public was backing that wasn't a huge favorite, and they won. So it's been a really challenging year for a lot of people to bet. I think what you're talking about with the skills certainly has something to do with it. It's incredibly frustrating to watch football right now. Almost inevitably, there is going to be a holding call or a pass interference call in a series that is going your direction. It's incredibly challenging to bet. I feel terrible for you. I feel terrible for a lot of people. The game is changing before our eyes, and we have to adjust on the fly.
You know, like, for instance, Buffalo -13.5 hosting the Dolphins. Well, the Dolphins are distracted with the Tua nonsense. They have the worst pass blocking line in the league. The Bills have the deepest defensive front in the league where they rotate 8 to 9 guys. I would have never considered that game. And part of me is like, oh, yeah, a totally focused Bills team is going to run them out of the stadium.
Yeah.
Seriously.
I've had this conversation multiple times with professional bettors this week. I've said, who do you like in this game? It's such a weird game. And they were like, oh, I like the Bills. I'm like, really? You like the Bills? And I'm like, 13.5 point favorite against a team that like needs a win. It's overinflated. The Bills are going to be the public side. And they're like, sometimes the public's right. And also the Bills average like beating the Dolphins by 20 points during the McDermott career, during the McDermott era. So like it's changing. And sometimes the right side is the public side. And we all got to get used to that.
All right, buddy. Good seeing you.
See you, my friend.
At the Volume Sports YouTube channel, Twitter, Instagram, rate, review, subscribe. We'll talk soon.
The Volume.